Hi, folks. Welcome back to the High Performance Human Podcast. My name is Simon Ward, and I'm your host this week and every other week. Well, it's almost 3 years since we started this podcast. And at the same time, or roughly similar time, we also started a Facebook page called the Triathlon Coach Cafe. You may be a member of that already. One of the things that we ask of our new members is for them to answer some questions. Firstly, to prove to us that they're genuine and they don't just want to spam us and promote their own business. And secondly, because some of the questions they ask provide us with great content. Now, in the past, I have actually gone through quite a lot of the questions and answered them myself, or I've had other guests, some coaching friends, to come on and help me answer them. I'm going to do that again today, but in a slightly different format. I contacted some of the people who asked me the questions and invited them to be a guest on the show, and two of them accepted. Stuart Melling asked me about how to get to 15 hours of training a week without being chronically fatigued. He's training for an Ironman, and I was most intrigued by his target of 15 hours and how that had come about. My second guest is Gitten Morgan. Gitten works for the emergency services in Wales and he works long shifts. And he's never found a training plan which incorporates shift work. So that's what we're going to discuss today, and I'm going to come up with a few solutions to try and help him out. The third question, which intrigued me, was sent in by Kevin Powell. Now, Kevin declined the opportunity to come on to the podcast, and that's fine. And I have no problem with that, but I will still provide Kevin with an answer. So Kevin will be my third answer. So you're going to hear two conversations first and then a narrative from myself. Before I go on to that, let me just say something about coronavirus. Hopefully I don't have to keep doing that, but maybe I will. It seems like it's going to be an ongoing situation for the next 6 to 12 months. It's been extremely trying and testing for all of us, me included. Obviously we've had to suffer lockdown, although let's put it into perspective, it hasn't been as bad as it has in some countries, has it? The police force here are much more libertarian than they are in places like France, in Italy and Spain, or maybe some of the Middle Eastern countries, so we shouldn't complain about that. And some of the other people who are in my SWAT group and on my Triathlon Coach Cafe page have had it far worse than we have. We've all had our races either rescheduled or postponed or cancelled altogether, and that's been challenging, emotional, sort of some people almost feeling like a grief and a bereavement. I understand that, but again, let's put it into perspective. It's far worse to lose a race than it is to lose a relative or a friend. And the races will come again next year. And with that, we have amazing opportunities, which is what I'm going to spend some of the next few weeks doing, is trying to help you understand what your opportunities are, knowing that you've got a long-term preparation. So that's for the future. For now, let's get cracking with this week's guests. So welcome to the show, Stuart Melling.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me on.
So Stuart, firstly, I'd like you just to repeat the question that you asked of me when you joined the Triathlon Coach Cafe.
Yeah, okay, Simon, thanks. So the question was, how can I get to 15 hours training a week without being chronically fatigued?
Okay, now, as a curious and inquisitive coach, Stuart, that I go through all the questions because they do provide me with a lot of content and things that I can blog about and things that I can answer on podcasts. And I felt like this one deserved a bit more than just a paragraph to answer, because I had some questions that needed clarifying in order for me to give you the right sort of answer. So my first question was surrounding the 15 hours and was what made you arrive at the idea that you needed to do 15 hours of training a week? I mean, I'm assuming that you're training for an Ironman, of course. Yeah.
Yes. So training for an Ironman, well, let's see with the coronavirus, but training for Bolton, I've actually deferred to next year. So I guess it's less pertinent right now. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the, I'm in a great club and we get some great feedback from the coaches, but a lot of the sort of training plans you look at online and through various books, they seem to kind of end up with around 15 hours a week as the peak for Ironman. I did staff's half last year and I peaked at about 10 hours. And that was kind of manageable, but having done a few sort of 13, 14 hour weeks in the last few months, you get to the point where you get up every morning and you've got DOMS in your legs and it's a struggle to get downstairs and you're not able to put a shift in on the bike that day. So it's kind of a cumulative effect.
Okay. So really the 15 hours came from a sort of pressure you see from maybe what other people are talking about in your club and the fact that that's just what everybody else seems to be talking about as the norm. The next part of your question said to get to this level without being chronically fatigued. So you sort of touched on that there. Have you been diagnosed with chronic fatigue, or have you just noticed that the fatigue is chronic, as in it just stays with you for long periods of time and you end up experiencing what you've just described?
No sort of formal diagnosis at all, no. So that, I guess that's the first thing. And when I talk about fatigue, I'm talking about two things. The first is really being tired all the time. Having asked the question some time ago, I don't have that now, so I guess that's not such an issue. Maybe you'll tell me it's sort of an adaptation process. But yes, still, you know, if you're training pretty much every day, it's really, really difficult to balance it. And, you know, you're in a position where you never feel fresh. You know, you enter a race and you've almost never got a set of fresh legs, you know.
Couple of questions around your training then, Stuart. What is it you do for a living?
I'm a business manager for an engineering company.
So you're working what most people consider to be relatively standard hours, 9 till 5, 8 till 6, that sort of thing?
Yeah, probably 7 till 6. Yeah, I mean, probably longer hours than some people, but yeah, it's regular office hours, if that's the best way to put it.
How much commuting do you do each day?
About an hour a day. An hour each way, so up to 2 hours a day.
Driving then?
Yeah.
So how far are you travelling? Is that a long journey, but free travel, or is it a short journey stuck in traffic?
It's the latter, so it's only about 25 miles, but it's pretty grim. Live in the northwest, and the M6 can be pretty tedious around the sort of Manchester area.
Would you say your job's highly stressful?
Yep.
Family life, married, children?
Yeah, married, two young kids. Katie and Freya, 5 and 9, so you know, the usual sort of family pressure, pleasant pressure, but it's there.
And are they active children, and is your wife active, you know, so they've got lots going on in their lives as well?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So are you the family dad, the taxi?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. It's entertaining, and you know, I mean, I sort of, we have a club training plan, which is brilliant, and I kind of try to follow it, but I can't remember a week when I was actually able to follow it, because it has to be so fluid with the job and the kids, you know.
How long have you been involved in triathlon, Stuart?
About 2 years. So I used to race motorbikes, run sort of most of my life, and cycled. As a leisure thing, not really just for fun, not for sort of serious fitness. So I did the Southport Triathlon with Epic Events early last year, and I did Stafford Half Ironman last year.
Also, do you mind if I ask how old you are, Stuart, please?
44.
There's three ages I think we have as humans. There's chronological age, which is what's on our birth certificate. Then there's our physiological age. So a lot of age group triathletes have a physiological age that's probably younger than their chronological age. You know, they'd probably be as fit as the average 30-year-old. Mm-hmm. And we also have our mental age, which is how we are in our state of mind, you know, how we approach the world. Do we still act like we were a teenager or in our early 20s, or have we sort of started thinking like granddad already and preparing for a later life? All of these things you've mentioned give me a bit more context now. I could probably ask you a whole load more questions, and that would take up the podcast in itself. There might be a couple of things that would be interesting, you know, to me. We talked about stress. How would you say your nutrition is on a daily basis? The food that you eat, everyday food, that is not what you eat surrounding you. You sort of like long bike rides or your long runs.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm trying to take the right levels of protein, sort of 1 to 1.5 times my body weight. I've just had a thing as a kid, and I didn't like vegetables. I eat quite a bit of fruit, you know, maybe an apple and banana a day, but I really do avoid vegetables just because I don't like the taste of them. You know, totally appreciate I shouldn't be eating them, and I've been using the OTE super greens to try and get some decent nutrients in, but I wouldn't say my nutrition's I don't eat a lot of fatty food, but I wouldn't say it's particularly great.
Got a sweet tooth?
Not particularly.
Okay. Like a drink occasionally?
Yeah, yeah.
Beer, wine?
Yeah, either.
Okay, I'm not trying to be judgmental here. It just gives me some just gives me some more information to work on. What about things like relaxation and?
Sorry, Sam. Just to interrupt you. Yeah, I did actually go teetotal for a couple of months, and that definitely helped. So maybe that's put some context around it as well.
Okay, interesting point. Yeah, I was just about to come on to sleep patterns and sleep then and relaxation in your life when you're not sleeping, but downtime, meditation, stretching, just, you know, maybe naps during the day if you can. Probably not when you're at work, but maybe at the weekend.
Don't generally take naps in the day very often. I mean, I don't go to bed late, so, you know, maybe sort of between 9 and 10. I do get up pretty early because I like to get the swim sessions done early morning. I get up pretty early with...
Go ahead. I was going to ask, what time you do get up?
Yeah, I mean, generally between 5 and 6. Me and my training partner have a thing that every weekend, one of the days we meet at 5, so we're up at sort of 4:30, and that's really just to get the hours in around family life.
Strength and conditioning, do any of that?
Yes, although I've sort of the last few weeks I've kind of realised a couple of friends have I feel like they've leapfrogged me a little bit on the bike and the run, and they're doing more than I do. So I'm kind of trying to tailor things. So I'm picking up more of that. To be honest, I'm following the British Triathlon Federation sort of standard upper and lower limb stuff on they've got on the website there.
Okay, yeah, I'm familiar with that one. Okay, as I said, I could send you if you were going to. Join my coaching program, I'd send you a 6-page questionnaire, which would give me a lot of this information in far more detail. But I've got enough to be going on with there. And what I would like to do now is take some time to come back with some recommendations for how to fit this into your weekly, daily routine and try to get you to the start of the Ironman that you've entered for. I mean, you've mentioned that you've deferred Bolton until 2021. Yeah. So actually, there's no pressure now. Really, you've got 14 months to get yourself mentally and physically prepared for this event, which means that you can afford to maybe take your foot off the gas a little bit and do it over a longer period of time. Stuart, welcome back. I've had a few weeks or a few days to consider the information that you gave me in our previous call. So based on that, I put together a few proposals for you. So shall I run through those first?
Yeah, hi, Simon. Yeah, if you would, please. Thank you.
I'll just remind the listeners that you were asking me how you could build up to doing 15 hours a week without getting chronically fatigued. So in our previous conversation, some of the points that were relevant that you mentioned were that each day you travel 25 miles to work and back, so a 50-mile round trip. Depending on the traffic, I guess that's going to be an hour or so each way, depending on when you leave and
yep.
et cetera. You've got a reasonably high-stress job. Mm-hmm. You're married and you've got two children aged 5 and 9, and so you do play the role of dad the taxi part of the time, so that eats into available training time, no doubt.
It does.
You've been doing triathlon for 2 years, but you're not a couchman to Ironman necessarily. You've raced motorbikes and I've no doubt you have to be reasonably fit and have good endurance for that.
Yeah.
You've also kept fit for fun. Mm-hmm. You trained for Staffordshire 70.3 last year and you were aiming for 13 to 14 hours a week, but that led to you getting frequently fatigued, tired a lot of the time, and you reported that you got quite a lot of DOMS there. You go to bed between 9 and 10 and you rise between 5 and 6. So you have eight hours in bed roughly, but I can tell from some of the sleep studies that I've been involved with that most people do have a fair percentage of time awake every night. So it's likely that you're probably getting 6.5 to 7 hours sleep around there.
Okay.
So that might be something you want to consider as well, is how to, as your training goes up, how to increase the amount of sleep to balance that out. So my suggested approach to this was a fairly global one, really, was firstly to start at the end. So let's, rather than aiming for a particular volume of training to do each week, which I think you said was sort of based on what you see other people doing and what a lot of the programs talk about, is rather than trying to fit fit something into your life, we need to work out what your life allows you to fit into it. So we start the other way around. And then we start at the very end, and I'd be asking you, what's your goal for the race? What's your finishing ambition, and where did that finishing ambition come from? If it's a performance time, and you want to get under a certain time, then you need to break that down and say, how will I achieve that within each discipline? What does that mean for me? If you're an ex-swimmer, you might be able to go sub 1 hour, and that will give you more time to complete the bike and run. If not, then then you have to have what's a reasonable swim time based on your current ability without exhausting yourself. And then knowing the Ironman Bolton course, which is the race you've chosen to do, what average power and speed that would give you for a finishing time off, getting off the bike and getting back to transition two, ready to do the run and get the run and finish it fairly strongly and not sort of be involved in that Ironman shuffle. And so then we need to go back even further and look at, well, what are the things that currently limit you? Injuries, technique, body mass, mental strategy. And then the other consideration for training is, what have you consistently been able to complete on a weekly basis previously? So we having a look at what you've been able to achieve over a 10-week spell, and probably take the two best 10-week spells you've had in recent years. That will give you a pretty good idea, because most people's lives are not going to change significantly to allow them to move far away from what was possible in their best 10-week blocks, unless obviously they retire or they win the lottery or something.
Or get sacked.
Or get sacked, yeah. But they're probably training for an Ironman would be the least of your worries at that point. But yes. But you might get sacked if you're doing 20 hours a week and you fall asleep on the job, I suppose. So again, we have to balance all of those things that you have to do in your life as well. So, taking care of your job, taking care of your family, being dad the taxi, and getting enough sleep. So it's a sort of constant balancing act to make sure that you can do all of those things as well as possible. So, yeah, those are my thoughts. Now, it might not lead to the sort of training you had in mind, but consistency is also always the big indicator of how well you're going to do on race day. So maybe it needs a longer term approach. And that doesn't mean you can't fit in big weeks and big days occasionally. So you might find opportunity to take a week off work and get a big week in just to push your fitness up a little bit and then start operating from that higher level. Or to have, we have 3 or 4 bank holidays over the year where you get a Friday or a Monday, and you can put a long weekend in there and have a big weekend built into your training.
Yeah.
So what did you think when you heard those suggestions?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, since we last spoke, I've given it quite a bit more thought, and I guess the first thing is history, because human nature is that you're probably going to do what you did before. People's lifestyles don't change too much. So when I trained for Stafford, I was doing sort of 8 to 10 hours a week. I've done that fairly consistently in the last few months, and that's been okay. And just to recap again, the 15 hours came from, there's tons of sort of internet blogs and articles and books, and that kind of, if you average all of those out, the 15 hours seems to be about a sort of general consensus about what you need for Ironman, just to finish it. So I think just the consistency of training has definitely helped. Definitely like the comments on not getting enough sleep. That's definitely a fact. And I suppose everybody has a time in mind. It's like when you first run a marathon and the first question people ask is what time are you aiming for? So my original goal was just to finish Ironman UK. I only entered it for a bet with a friend a couple of years ago. And then, of course, you sort of look at other athletes in the same club or in the same area as you, and you kind of look at the times they've done. And I'd kind of polarized on 14 and a half hours being, probably realistic for me. The Bolton course has changed, and I've now got another year to train with the COVID thing. I deferred it anyway, but it's subsequently been postponed. So I'm kind of thinking, okay, the course is a little bit easier now. Assuming they keep the same course for the course they planned for this year for next year, so I'm kind of thinking 14 hours might be achievable.
based on your advice, I've kind of broken that down, and the swimming is easily my weakest discipline. I think it was 47 minutes in Staffordshire last year. My swimming's definitely improved since then. So if I kind of double that, and I appreciate I need to build my endurance, but if I double that, I'm looking at an hour and 30 minutes for the swim probably. Like to do better than that, but you know, let's say that's realistic now. If I give myself 30 minutes for transition one and transitions two and a bit of sort of messing about time, if I can't open it.
How many did you say there? 30?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's generous. I mean, if you have a plan to go through transition, as long as there's not a long run from swim to bike and bike to run, you should be able to get through transitions in under 10 minutes each.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was pretty, the few triathlons I've done, I've been pretty quick through the transition. I'm not sort of sitting having a cup of tea, but I'm thinking half an hour. Let's say 10 minutes for each transition, which I'd aim to do in less than that, and then another 10 minutes for if something goes wrong, or just building in a little bit of time really. Bike, I mean, I've got friends who've done it in just over 7 hours. They are slightly fitter than me, slightly more powerful than me, so I'm thinking 7.5 hours is possible. My marathon, I'm pretty confident of a 4-hour marathon, but at the end of all that, it's probably likely to be a 5-hour marathon. I did Windermere Marathon, and that was, it's very hilly, and really, really suffered towards the end of it. I did that in about 5 hours. So that's kind of my thinking, really. If I sort of stack that up, I can kind of get to around 14 hours.
So thinking as we chat now, you've got over a year to prepare for this, so that gives you that gives you a fantastic preparation period.
Yep.
And that means that you don't have to rush things. You don't have to force things. You know, if you could commit to consistency. So in order to get 10 hours a week between now and next July, which is, let's call it 14 months. Okay. And if we average out 4 weeks, that's 56 weeks. Okay, and if you were able to do 10 hours a week for 56 weeks, that's 560 hours in the bank. Now, if we use the cake making analogy, you've made that cake pretty well. You don't need to do a huge amount of training, a huge amount of peaking for that. You could sharpen up in 8 weeks there, but you've got an awful lot of time to just get the miles in the bank. Build a great foundation, slowly build that FTP. I mean, you mentioned that you're looking to build your FTP up to 280 watts.
Yes.
Okay, so 30 watts over the course of a year. It's doable. A lot depends on where you're coming from for a lot of people and the type of training. And it's not all about FTP. It's FTP is a bit like VO2 max, and it's sort of like a vanity figure. What's really important is the power that you can sustain for 7 hours, the average power you can sustain for 7 hours over the course of that Ironman, and then still be able to get off and run. So, you could have an FTP of 400, but if you're going to have to walk that whole marathon, it's no good to anyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
So learning to ride at say 70%, and there's some tables that show you, roughly what percentage of FTP you should be riding at, depending on how long you anticipate being out on the course. Then that's a table Joe Friel put together. So I'll put that in the show notes of the podcast for listeners, and I'll send that to you. But
great,
you've got a rough idea that around 68 to 70% of functional threshold. So if you do get to 280, then you're looking at minusing 80-85 watts off that. So you're looking at trying to hold around 190 to 200 watts on average for that bike course. Now, a lot also depends on your power to weight ratio. So, there may be adjustments that you can make in body weight to up that figure by losing a few kilos if you have a few kilos.
Definitely.
And again,
definitely,
over the period of a year, that doesn't mean drastic changes to nutrition. It might mean some strategic changes to nutrition. But also with regards to nutrition, looking at it in terms of what can I do to support my training? So there are macronutrients and micronutrients that you need. There's all sorts of dietary philosophies out there, and I'm quite agnostic on those. What I think is, you need, if you eat real food, you stay away from processed carbs and you stay away from refined sugars as much as possible, you'll do pretty well. So there's some easy wins that most people get by reducing down their weekly alcohol intake, by reducing those processed snacks. There may be a way you can do it by altering some of the sports nutrition that you have. So that's one thing, and you have to look at nutrition as a way of helping your body to repair itself and refuel, but also for your long term health. You know, because if I do have a big fear that with the amount of sugars that some endurance athletes are consuming, we're going to end up with a group of endurance diabetics in not so distant future. Lifestyle as well. So, you know, that consistency that we talked about over the next 14 months comes from not getting injured, not getting ill, and not getting too fatigued. So fatigue leads to you being a bit run down. It puts pressure on your immune system, leaves you a bit more at risk of getting ill. So we want to try and avoid those incidences of fatigue that you mentioned that you got before Staffordshire. So you have a program, but you have to be balancing that versus what your family requires and what your work requires as well. You have to be getting the good sleep to enable you to maintain a strong immune system. So sleep's really important here. And then making sure that you have intensity discipline in those training sessions. So if you've committed to do 10 hours a week, you've proved to yourself that you can do 10 hours a week. But where it sometimes falls down is where we allow ourselves to do a session harder than we should do, which means that creates more fatigue, which means that when we have the next session to do, we feel a little tired. And then the option to bail out of that is higher.
Yeah. And they're the fun sessions, Simon. So that, you know, everybody likes the hills and the tough sessions, and you feel like you're getting the benefit from that because you're knackered afterwards. So, I guess it's just a discipline thing.
Yeah, and there's no reason why you can't do those sessions, because you do have the breakthrough sessions that give you confidence about your ability, that show that, you know, last time I did this hill, I rode up here, it took me 6 minutes, and now I'm taking 5.5 minutes, so there's been an improvement of several percent. I didn't feel as tired afterwards, so that's boosts your confidence and lets you know that you are moving forwards. And there would be sessions like that planned into training, and that's fine. And what you want to do is make sure that when those sessions are planned in there, you arrive at the start of them feeling fantastic and really ready to smash it and give it everything. It's the problem comes when you inadvertently put those efforts in sessions where it's not designed. So that's where I talk about intensity discipline. Have those sessions in, protect them, make sure you turn up well. And then on the other sessions, just do the background stuff. You know, if you're an engineer, so you know that before you make and do anything that's fancy, there's a lot of preparation work that goes into it, a lot of foundation work. Yeah. Well, the low-level training that you do 90% of the time is the foundation work that allows you to make the fancy, you know, equipment and machinery that looks great.
Sure, got it.
So that's what you're able to do if you've got 14 months to go at this, is to build a huge, great, big, strong platform and foundation that will support all of this stuff. And what you see on race day is you see some people that turn up incredibly fit, but they don't have a big foundation underneath them. So when things start to go a bit wrong halfway through the run, which is where most people start to slow down, what you find is that they're trotting along, and let's say you're going to do a four and a half hour marathon. So you're looking at around 6 minutes per kilometer pace. So you're trotting along at your target pace, and you get to 21K, and then all of a sudden your pace drops off the cliff and you start walking, and now you're doing 7 minutes per K or 8 minutes per K, right? Mm. With a big foundation, this is where you notice that your time drops off from 6 minutes per K to 6 minutes 15. And I'm not suggesting it's going to be easy. You're going to have to knuckle down there and, you know, start using your mind a little bit more. But you can maintain, and it'll hurt, but you can maintain that pace because of the foundation you've built.
Yeah, I understand. Okay?
So you've got some fantastic opportunities. You've got an opportunity to look at your technique on your swim. You've got an opportunity to make yourself efficient on the run, and you've got an opportunity to make some slow but everlasting changes to your lifestyle that will promote a better long-term health, and then on the back of that, great performance.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The question is, right, that's the advice. Are you willing to commit to that?
Yeah. A lot of the stuff we talked about, it isn't a massive change, is it? You know, it's just about everybody keeps talking about sort of incremental gains. It's little bits of changes here and there. It's half an hour earlier to bed. Yeah, perhaps don't have a few beers on a Friday or a Saturday or a Sunday. And just some of those pool sessions in the morning where you roll over and don't bother. It's just making sure you hit those, I guess. So probably one of the biggest takeaways is the what did you call it, intensity discipline. So you're on an easy ride, and you know you come to some big hills, and you just naturally want to give it everything up them, you know. So I think it's just trying to hold yourself back a little bit as well.
There's a lot of heroes out on club rides at the weekend in the middle of winter. But what you see from two champions is the ability to hold back from being the hero then, because they know that the glory comes from crossing the finish line and getting your goal. Yeah, because that's when it's noticeable. That's when you've got the photograph with the time above your face, smiling face with your arms aloft. You probably don't have many photographs from those club rides in October of you climbing the hill and beating your Strava PB on that particular day.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and that, to be honest, that's where, when you think about all the athletes that do really well, that those are the things you don't see, is that they're the ones who sit at the back of the group in the winter thinking, well, it's just a steady day today. That's what my coach has asked me to do. That's what's on the plan. So that's what I'm doing. Yeah. And they know that,
true.
That on the day when it counts, they will be the ones who are, you know, setting new PBs and getting the glory then. So, intensity discipline is important, but lifestyle discipline is good as well, you know. Small changes over a long period of time can make a massive difference. And never marginal gains is something that's talked about a lot, but there's huge gains to be had from just making small changes to simple things. Leave the fancy gadgetry and, you know, the aero skin suit and the pointy helmet and the new wheels, and just do the things that are simple to change, like eating a bit better, sleeping a bit better, and having that intensity discipline. And not only will you do well in Bolton next year, but you'll probably find that you can carry that on and do well in future years because you created some long-lasting benefits.
Yeah, okay, okay.
All right.
Yeah, smashing. Thank you very much. It was good.
Maybe what we should do is return in 6 to 12 months time, Stuart, and have you on another podcast to see how you get.
Well, yeah, I have to say, I mean, that's going to probably put the pressure on a bit, and that's probably going to help the discipline, right?
Accountability. That's why we have coaches, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay, Stuart.
Yeah, smashing. Thanks, Simon. Appreciate that.
Well, thank you for agreeing to be part of the podcast. It's nice to get a human voice on to articulate a question that's been sent in rather than just reading out from a bit of paper. So I appreciate you being part of this.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. Thanks for the advice. Appreciate it.
Okay, well, best wishes. Best wishes for getting yourself and your family through COVID, and we'll catch up with you later.
Yeah, you too. All right. Thanks, Simon. Cheers.
Bye now. Bye, Stuart. Welcome to the show first, Gideon.
Thank you very much.
Please, could you recap the question you asked on joining the Triathlon Coach Cafe?
Yeah, thanks, Simon. My question initially was, I work for the emergency services and I work shift work. So I do four days on and 4 days off. And I just like some tips just in relation to a training plan, because I've not seen a training plan that incorporates a shift.
Okay. Now, you in your initial question, you also said that you do 12-hour shifts. So you start at 6, finish at 6, yeah?
Yeah, that kind of pattern.
Okay.
So it's a 2 day, 12 hours and two 12 hours night shift.
Okay, in that order, 2 days, two nights, and then four off, yeah?
Yeah.
And that pattern revolves right the way throughout the year, does it?
Yeah, all through the year.
Okay, and what events are you currently training for?
It's the, if it'll go ahead in the current climate, it's the Ironman Wales in Tenby.
Okay, and is Ironman your chosen triathlon distance, or is this the first time you've moved up?
It's the first time for an Ironman, but I've done a lot of triathlons and stuff, but this is my first hit at a full Ironman.
Okay. Are you finding it more difficult training for an Ironman to get the training in around this shift pattern than you would have done if you were training for, say, a standard or a sprint?
No, not at the moment. Obviously, I'm just starting off at the base and just moving on up now to like more bigger distances. But it's just, I've not reached the biggest distances yet in training. No, it's going okay so far.
Okay, so let me just get a little bit of context around the days when you're working then. So is it 6 a.m. start and 6 p.m. finish? Or
no,
a 6 p.m. start and 6 p.m. finish?
I'd start at 7 a.m., finish at 7, and then that's a day shift, and on the nights I'd start at 7 and finish at 7 as well.
Okay.
So it's 7-7.
So on the day, on the days when you're working, how far do you how far do you have to travel to work? So what time do you have to leave home to get to work ready for shift at 7?
I live about 20 minutes in a car away, but I, especially with the summer months, I try and cycle to work. This is something I was going to mention to you. It's about 20 minutes in a car, but it's about 12 miles away. Now, it's about 400 metres ascent, and that ascent is going up to work, so I'd leave about 5:30 on the bike to be there, to be ready for work for 7, and it'd be about 35 minutes to get back home. So that's one of my trainings that I incorporate on my actual working days. That's the only kind of time I can get the cycling. Or if the weather's poorer, I'd drive in and then get some sort of a core workout or a run when I finish.
What sort of swimming opportunities are there for you when you're working days?
None at all, to be honest. So it'd be a day shift and a day shift, and then I'd have some sort of like a bubble day where you're off for that day and you don't work till the night. So I've got like a buffer day, so I'd try and get my swim in then.
Okay, so what you're saying there is if it was a Monday and a Tuesday daytime, you finish at 7 p.m. on Tuesday evening, but you don't start work until, if you're going on tonight, you wouldn't start work until 7 p.m. on the Wednesday evening, correct?
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
Okay.
Wednesday off, kind of.
And then when you've, if it was a Wednesday, you would do 7 p.m. Wednesday till 7 a.m. Thursday.
Yeah.
And then 7 p.m. Thursday to 7 a.m. Friday. And then when you've got your 4 days off, when would you go back to work after that then?
I think it's the Tuesday prior. So if you start on Monday, the next week you'll be starting on Tuesday.
Okay. On the times when you're working nights, you get home at 7. Do you go straight to bed, or do you do some training before you go to bed, or do you go to sleep first and then do some training when you get up?
So if I've cycled to work, obviously my cycle home would be my exercise, and then cycle up when I go up again. But usually, no, if I haven't been cycling, I'd go to sleep first before doing any sort of exercise that day.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
Yeah, and just another one to factor in, obviously, when you're doing that, sleep becomes really important in the pattern, as I don't feel any benefit of going for a run when I'm absolutely exhausted after doing the 12 hours. I'd rather sleep and then get some quality training in. And obviously with a 12 hours shift, there's not a lot of buffer to get like really long training in. So it's usually about an hour tops.
Okay, so if you finished your final night shift 7 a.m. Thursday morning,
mm-hmm.
You go to bed, you maybe do an hour later on in the day, is that right?
Yeah, on that day I'd wake up earlier. I'd wake up about lunchtime just to get myself into a normal sleeping pattern then. So I'd get, that would be a bigger day. I'd probably get like a block set, so two exercises in that day.
Okay, and out of any of those days of your time off, your 4 days off, are there any particular patterns you've noticed where you feel more energetic or really feel like rubbish?
Yeah, it's usually straight when I finish work, you're kind of recuperating then after work and after all them kind of big blocks of working. So you just kind of feel better, more energetic as the rest of this goes on.
Hey, welcome back, Gitten Morgan.
Thank you very much.
So we chatted a couple of weeks ago. You had this question for me, which was pretty similar to, or pretty much, any tips for training whilst working shifts, because you hadn't managed to find anywhere that had a program that fitted your work pattern.
Yeah, that's true.
So what I will do is I'll just go over your work pattern again. So you work 8-day shift pattern as first 2 days, you are working daytime. So you work 7 a.m. till 7 p.m.
Yeah.
So if we started that on a Monday, that'd be Monday and Tuesday, following that pattern, 7 till 7. On Wednesday, you then don't go into work until 7 p.m. in the evening. So you've got a full day there.
Yeah.
And you work through till 7 a.m. Thursday. Then you're back in on Thursday night at 7 p.m. And you finish your 4 days of working at 7 a.m. on Friday morning. Then you've got all of Friday, all of Saturday, all of Sunday, all of Monday off, and then you repeat that pattern again starting on the Tuesday. Yeah?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. So you gave me a brief idea in our previous call of what your training tended to consist of. So on the Monday, you bike to and from work. Can you just remind me how far that is?
It's 12 miles, and there'll be about 300 meters of ascent to work.
So you've got the opportunity, probably on the way back maybe, or some days if the weather's nice or you're feeling okay, you've got the opportunity to extend that ride, I suppose.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Okay, so on those 2 days when you're working days, you just tended to bike to and from work. Mm-hmm. On the Wednesday, because you've got the full day before you start your night shift, you tended to squeeze in a swim and a run.
Yeah.
And do you bike to work on the Wednesday night then as well?
Well, that could be weather dependent, but usually out of a whole working set, I'd cycle in twice on average.
Okay. So you said you sometimes cycle in on a Thursday night and then ride home on the Friday morning.
Yeah, and have an extended cycle on the way home.
Yeah, then you've got all of Friday off, but I guess you're still going to go to sleep in the morning, aren't you? And then you can swim and run in the afternoon. And then on Saturday, Sunday and Monday, you tended to do a swim and or a run. Yeah?
Yeah.
So there'd be some flexibility there depending on how you felt and, you know, the weather and all of that other stuff. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So these were my observations based on our first conversation. So for those listening and the ones who've been listening closely, it would be fairly obvious now that you have a unique working life. And because of that, I think it's unlikely that you're going to find any off-the-shelf plans that fit this.
Yeah.
You might find one somewhere if you search hard enough, but most coaches that are, if you're using the Training Peaks platform, for instance, and you're a coach and you sell your training plans through there, most of those coaches would have looked at what was most popular in terms of events, in terms of what the customer is looking for, and they would create something for which there is a demand. There will be people like yourself who have this sort of shift pattern, but you're in a very small group. And so it's unlikely that you're going to find something just sitting out there waiting for you to find the perfect program. Okay. Mm-hmm. What I would say, though, is that if you found that this pattern fits your lifestyle and it works for you, then I would continue with this.
Okay.
I could spend quite a bit of time trying to create a different pattern for you.
Mm-hmm.
But to be quite frank, I've no idea. You'd have to just test it and see. I'd have no idea whether that would be any better than what you've currently got.
Yeah.
Okay. And so for that reason, what I'd say is that the pattern of sort of fitting in activities by going to and from work, you should continue with that for the moment. Certainly that rhythm of how you get to and from work around your nights and your day shifts and when you can swim. But tweak it by reflecting, you know, change one thing and think, right, on this 8-day pattern, or, you know, do it over two or three blocks, so over maybe a month, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try swimming on these days. I'm going to do a long ride here. I'm going to ride further. I'm going to try running to work one day, etc. And then getting a lift home or something. And then reflect on what works and what doesn't, because that's the only way anybody ever knows what's happening with a program, is to do something and then reflect on it and then work out, did it improve? Did I feel better on it? Was it any better? Was it any worse? And then either stick with it or change it again.
Okay.
What I would probably suggest is that you find a way to progress something over a 6 to 8 week period. So if you have this pattern and you just go swimming and then you run and then you do some core work and you bike to work, but there's no real focus there, then you'll be generally fit. But because you're training for a race that involves a sea swim, so you might want to do something that helps you to improve swimming in the sea. So maybe working on faster cadence, maybe actually when the weather improves and the sea gets warmer, to actually swim in the sea and understand how to sort of work to and from the currents, because it can get quite choppy down there in Tenby.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to do that. You might want to do some stuff where you're swimming with other people and getting used to swimming in a crowd, although with a current sort of socially distance opportunities, that might be difficult. So you could do that with swimming. With biking, there's lots of hills in Tenby. So you maybe want to work on your bike strength and your handling skills. I'm not suggesting that you should start to become a super descender and be able to descend at 50, 60 miles an hour, because the roads are pretty narrow and most of them have got sharp corners at the bottom. So, you know, the faster you go, the sharper you've got to stop. And that's, you know, could be counterproductive. So, but certainly descending with confidence, that could be something. It's quite hilly in Tenby, so it requires you to be on the run, that is. So it requires strength rather than outright speed. Maybe downhill running would be something there. There's quite a lot of downhills, and that's not something that a lot of people tend to work on, but you could gain a lot of time or save a lot of energy by learning to run downhill efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So there's things you could work on over an 8 week period. So you could have a focus and say, right, in this 8 week period, I'm going to just cycle to and from work. I'm going to smash it on the hills when I get the opportunity. But my real focus is to boost my swimming, either my swimming volume or my swimming technique. You mentioned before that swimming was perhaps the thing you were most concerned about. I would look at things that are your weaknesses. So do a full strength, weaknesses, opportunities and threats analysis and find out what you're weak at. So it might not necessarily be anything to do with swim, bike and run. It could be your nutrition. It could be your mindset. It could be strength and conditioning. It could be mobility.
Okay.
I would think about the long term. You know, if COVID-19 has shown us anything, is that perhaps we all ought to focus more on the long term, on our health and ways in which we can be healthy first. And there's no doubt that if you're a healthy human being, then you can become a high-performing athlete as well. But if you're unhealthy, you're never going to get the best performances. So maybe that will be a long-term focus, is how to remain healthy. And it does present challenges when you're working nights. I know that. One thing I did notice in this pattern as I'd written it down was there was no obvious rest day in there. So I would say at points, I was thinking about planning in a rest day. My obvious one would be if you were measuring things like heart rate variability, you would see that it would be suppressed at times, probably when you're working nights and probably on that Friday or Saturday as you come off nights and you start getting back into that sleep pattern. So Friday would look like, if you're biking home from work, would look like the obvious opportunity to have a full day off there and focus on maybe just stretching and resting and getting good sleep. And then back on it, maybe an easy day on the Saturday as well, as you're still getting over it, and then use Sunday and Monday as days when you can really get in some good solid training.
Push hard. Okay.
Yeah, those might be days, and maybe the Wednesday as well might be a day when you could do a moderately hard day, when you sort of you've been working days and now you've got a full day, but you don't want to go too hard on that day, because then you're going to be up for 12 hours, so you don't want to be sort of falling asleep halfway through that shift because you're absolutely knackered. So some other changes you could consider, more mobility and strength work.
Yeah.
To do that, I would get a physio assessment and a full body assessment to find out about you as a person, where your tight spots are, and where your weaknesses are, structural weaknesses, and then also look at the injury pattern for triathlon. You know, most of the injuries that triathletes get are in the lower limb from running. And so if you're weak in the calves or you have tight ankles, that might be a contributor. So that an assessment there would show you where you're weak and what you can do to strengthen up on those. We talked about the rest day. I would have a think about, you know, because your sleep patterns are compromised when you're working nights, no doubt, how you can enhance the sleep that you do get by looking at your sleep hygiene, things you do before you go to bed, your bedroom, you know, particularly when you're sleeping during the days, like proper blackout blinds where you can make the room as dark as possible. You know, if you have blinds, there will be light seeping around the corner. So some people go to the extremes of using masking tape and completely blacking out the window.
Important factor to get through the sleeping through the day.
Yeah, and things like wearing earplugs. You know, at this time of year, there's a lot of ambient noise during the day, so people probably aren't aware that you're sleeping when they're going about their business outside your house. So you can't stop them doing what they do in a day. But you could wear some earplugs. Look at this would be through trial and error, but the best times to do your long rides and long runs and long swims. You might be able to do a longish ride coming back from work one day. Or maybe those long rides could be the, you know, maybe the Saturday, the Sunday and Monday, or the sort of day seven and day eight of that pattern.
Yeah.
Maybe that long swim could be the one activity perhaps that wouldn't take too as much out of you. You could probably do that on that day when you're changing over from days to nights, when you've got a bit more time there.
Yeah.
Okay. But certainly looking at things like nutrition and what you eat before you go to sleep would be good. And also I would recommend some high intensity work. It's good for upping your VO2 max, but certainly on the bike and the run, building that power to get you up those inclines that you're going to face. And some of them are, quite steeper than most Ironman races, and so your heart rate's going to be going quite high, and so you want to be able to recover quickly. So doing some training where you're going to be pushing out big watts and then learning to recover from that quickly, you might find that very beneficial.
Okay, thanks.
So that was the limit. There's quite a lot there. We've not really changed the pattern that you're using. We're just sort of looking at enhancing some of the things you do. So what were your initial impressions when you first read all of that?
It's what I expected, but obviously it's nice to have it kind of certified in a way by someone like yourself, and it's quite cool, and it's quite I feel quite good that you've noticed the kind of finer points that I notice myself when I'm going through this kind of pattern. The only kind of observations or questions I've got really is, or some after your approval really, it's that from a week to week basis, if we're doing it on an eight day week, is that I'm usually just keeping this as a vague plan for the week. So for example, like if I do this eight day set this week, maybe next week the working days could be longer, they could be harder, more tiring, and the weather not so favourable. So it's just, what would your opinion be if it was to be mixed up, you know, mix up the week? Just for myself, it keeps it a bit more interesting just to do different things. But generally, I've been trying to just give myself a target of trying to do X amount of cycling or swimming and running and core a week, and just keeping this as a vague plan. Well, what's your observations on that?
Well, I suppose that you have to keep in mind what your goal is. Yeah, goal for Ironman Wales. You know, there are certain principles of training that we should adhere to with any program, regardless of whether it fits in a perfect pattern or whether it has to be based around a sort of quite a more complex working pattern like yours. And one of those principles is specificity. So the training you do needs to be specific for the event or the sport that you are going to be participating in. So look at the things that you are going to be doing in order to try and complete Ironman Wales. You know you've got to swim, bike and run, so you need to have some of that in there every week. It's a long event. The swim can take some people up to two and a quarter hours or two hours, whatever the cutoff is. You know, it can take some people that time. So you're going to be out there swimming for a long time. So swim endurance, bike endurance, and run endurance are absolutely key. Wales is a course that has a lot of challenges, a lot more than most races. It's got a very hilly bike circuit, you know, and the hills are short and sharp. They're not long and gradual, so you can't get into a rhythm. Mm. And they require some strength to be doing that, you know, for 6, 7, 8 hours. And you're quite, how much do you weigh, if you don't mind me asking?
Sorry?
How much do you weigh?
78 kilos.
78, okay, so... You're not a racing snake, but you're not a huge guy either. But still, you've got to get 78 kilos up over those hills. And that requires a fair amount of strength and power, strength endurance. So that's something specific that you need to be working on as you're climbing strength. And likewise, Wales has one of the hillier courses. The hills aren't that steep on the run, but it does have a lot more climbing, and there's four laps. And so you constantly, my recollection was that you're either going up or down. There aren't really any flat spots in that thing. So, you know, hill running skills and efficiency are the specifics. So it's fine to, you know, you have to be flexible, because you're absolutely right. You don't know what your working day is going to bring until you get there, because you know, because of the job you're in. So listening to your body and being flexible, but still having a little goal over, say, an 8-week period.
Yeah.
And if you had an 8-week period, that gives you enough time for adaptations to take place. But I would guess that over that 8-week period, that everything would even out. You'd have some hard weeks and you'd have some easier weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely true, yeah.
So there is a thing called recovery on demand, which means that rather than having standard days penciled in for resting and recovering and rest days, you take it when your body demands it. But you have to be really good at listening to your body. And if you're not, and you're sort of one of these people that's like, yeah, well, I need to get in a long ride. Although I'm absolutely shattered and I'm yawning all the time, I need to get in a long ride, so I'm going to force myself through it. You know, if you're that sort of person, you might come unstuck with recovery on demand. If you're the sort of person that says, well, my body's yawning and there's a reason for it, so today I probably just need to go for a walk or put my bike on the turbo and just spin my legs gently and have a bit more sleep, then you might do quite well out of that.
Mm.
So going back to whether that plan would work, think of the long term. First, be a healthy human. If you can be healthy and you can be fit and you can finish the Ironman doing that, then carry on with that plan. If you can be healthy and you can be fit enough to do the Ironman, but you've got goals for the Ironman, then you need to be a little bit more specific about your training. You know, if those goals include being able to swim a certain pace, being able to ride at a certain power, and being able to run at a certain pace to finish in under a certain time, then you need to make sure that you can actually achieve those. And that's where you have to get a bit more specific about your training and the training that you do. So how you get more powerful on the bike, it's not about an even effort in Wales. It's not about an even effort. It's about managing those hills and recovering. So climbing technique and the power to get up them and have energy to spare. Likewise with the run, it's about being able to get through that bike and then run efficiently so you can keep doing those hills through to lap four. And in which case, then you need to have certain things. So in each of those you need to have certain other skills. So in each of those 8-week periods, I'd be having a block of training that you can focus on. So you say, right, on this one here, I'm going to try and become a stronger runner by the end of this 8-week block.
Okay.
Or by the end of this 8-week block, I want to improve my swim endurance. So you just swim more, or I want to improve my swim speed. So you don't necessarily swim more, you swim faster.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But all the time. thinking of what your body's telling you. And that's the biggest thing throughout this, really, is listening to your body and making it consistent. If you can look back after 8 weeks and see that you didn't miss any planned sessions, then that will be a pretty good result as well.
Yeah, it's a big game to juggle, but yeah.
And I mean, there's other ways that you can get more out of the training you currently do. You know, if you look at your sleep and your nutrition and think about, most people have got some capacity to improve both of those. So, you know, look at what you do there. With the nutrition, I'd be looking at stuff like how much processed carbohydrate stuff do you eat during a day? So by that, I mean packeted food, pre-made food. Do you eat lots of pasta? Do you eat lots of rice? Do you eat lots of bread? You know, there's an ongoing debate about whether carbohydrates are super important or partly important, or, you know, for long distance triathlon. And that's a philosophy that I'm not keen on pointing people towards, you know. All I would say is, if you eat real food and avoid processed food, then that might be an enhancement. So if you want to eat carbohydrates, eat things that like wholemeal rice. If you're going to eat bread, eat breads that are perhaps fermented or have less of the sort of additives in. Or you can have carbohydrates that come in the form of root vegetables. So things like sweet potatoes are pretty good there.
Yeah.
If you've got a sweet tooth and you've got a tendency to fuel a lot of your training with sports nutrition, you might want to be considering whether that's entirely necessary all the time, some of the time, or even ever. And whether all of that sugar you're consuming is doing stuff to you, is then having another impact on your blood sugar and your insulin and other sort of health things. So you could make changes there.
Okay.
And if you like to have a beer, and there's nothing wrong with that, but how you drink and how you consume alcohol around the bedtime is, it can also have an impact on your sleep. So that might be something you want to consider as well, is when you consume alcohol versus when you sleep.
I hope you're not encouraging me to turn into a day drinker.
Not at all, but I've noticed I have one of these little wrist straps that measures heart rate variability and sleep quality. And the things that I've noticed are, so on a normal night, when you come home from work at 7 o'clock, and let's say you're going to go to bed at 11, okay? So you have time to unwind, make yourself some dinner. If you were to have a beer or a glass of wine when you first come in, that gets a chance to get metabolized a little bit.
Yeah.
It has less of an impact on your sleep quality if you were to drink it early on in the evening than if you were to have a beer after your dinner just before you go to bed. Okay. Or if you had a beer when you came in and then you had another one before you went to bed, it would affect the quality of your sleep and your recovery. So it's just little things that I've learned like that. I've not tried working shifts, so I wouldn't know what would happen if you came back from work at 7 a.m. and decided to have a glass of wine before you went to bed. That would be out of my comfort zone. Okay, so did you have any ideas of things that you could immediately start working on then, after looking at those ideas that I sent through to you?
Yeah, it's the it's a lot of what I'm doing already, to be honest. But yeah, just happy that you're of the same opinion. Really, sleeping is a really important part of when you're working shifts. So I really try and look after that. And obviously nutrition around working shifts, again, an important part. You're not guaranteed work food at a set time during a shift work, especially in the profession I work. So it's just really trying to look after that and then eat properly when you're off as well. To make sure that you're getting everything that you need really to keep on top of your training as well as working.
Yeah.
And I think it's more to do with training with how you feel. So I know how you said, I agree with the third or fourth rest day, I'm naturally feeling a lot stronger. So on them days, I'm pushing harder and I'm going longer. Or I'm having, specified harder, or running faster, or for a longer period. But yeah, I think it's just a continuous struggle, to be honest, but knowing what you're trying to achieve. So especially after, as you mentioned, like after the night, if I was finishing the set on Friday, respect that you need to sleep. So it's have a full sleep cycle and then maybe just have a light run at that time. Just always have it on your mind, really. That
over time, you'd want to have certain benchmarks. You don't need to do tests. You don't need to do time trials. And some people like doing those sorts of, you know, do a 400 meter time trial in the pool, do a 10 mile time trial while you're on your bike. You know, run a certain course and see how fast you can run it. It's not always about getting faster. You know, there's a certain point where you stop improving or making huge gains.
Yeah.
Okay. And there can be times when you can do a test and you know, it's not as good as the previous one. It looks like you've gone backwards, but that may not be the case. There could be reasons why you just didn't perform as well on a particular day. And what you might notice is that, for instance, if you do, you've got a 10-mile run circuit, that whereas you used to feel sore and tired for 3 days, now you notice that you're only sore and tired for 36 hours after it. So you're recovering a lot quicker. So you're not stronger, but you're recovering a lot quicker. So the depth of your conditioning is much better.
Yeah.
You might notice that rides home, you know, become with all of the climbs, you just feel a lot better on the climbs now. You're able to turn over slightly bigger gear, or whereas you used to have to stand up to get over a particular part of the climb, you can sit down now. So you've become stronger there. You would definitely want to have some control sessions. So you might have a swim where you're doing 2100s. So you go back to that regularly and just look at times. You know, maybe you've not got any faster, but maybe the range within which you're able to complete those 100 meters is tighter. You know, or you're able to take less recovery, or you just feel like it's more manageable. Maybe there's a turbo set you can do, and I would recommend that you have at least one or two high intensity sessions in there each week total. So no more than one per sport, but you might have a high intensity bike each week, and that way you could do, you know, this week I'm going to do 10 times 60 seconds. Next week I'm going to do 11 and 12. So you can see that there's some progress there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Just another last quick one. Obviously when I do cycle to work, I've got to bring in all my food for that set, and the clothes for work. So it's quite a considerable weight, which is obviously quite good for going up the hills. Any comments on that? I just want to know if there's no, I don't want to be putting any strain on my back or anything. Is that okay?
I mean, do you feel like if you're wearing a backpack, do you feel like you're putting strain on your back?
No, I've got it. It's like an Osprey bag, and you can have it quite really tight. So if I'm going out of the saddle, it doesn't. There's no kind of additional strains.
Some people don't like wearing backpacks. You know, if it's a And there's always the possibility that it can restrict your breathing as well, because you've got it on so tight to stop it moving around. It can also restrict your breathing a little bit. Remember that you're just commuting, so there's nothing wrong with that. It's specific in that it's biking. It's not specific in that it's probably not your race bike, and it's probably, you know, you're not in your Lycra, so you could be faster. But that's just building up what I'd call base endurance miles and some strength.
Oh yeah, I'm going in my Lycra as it happens.
Yeah, I mean, you could, if you're worried about your back, you could explore the idea of some panniers or a big saddlebag put on. There's people that use those as well, and the load is on the bike and not on you, so it wouldn't change the total weight that you're riding with, and the bike might feel a little different, but equally, you wouldn't be worried about that strain on your back. But if you've managed so far without it causing a problem, then I would say it probably isn't an issue.
Yeah, cool.
But then you definitely want to be having one or at least one session in that 8-day block where you can where you can control everything. So you'd want to be on your smart trainer, and you'd want to be doing something where you don't have to worry about the hills or the wind or carrying your kit.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. So I'd probably have one swim, one high intensity swim in there, and one high intensity bike. With the run, the high intensity running is the one that's going to cause more fatigue, not necessarily more injury. So it'd be difficult to know where to put that one. And you might want to alternate bike and run,
okay.
You know, on different cycles. But as long as you're doing a couple per week, get the physiological benefits.
Okay.
And then you can chart your progress through those. All right.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
In the winter, that's a great program just for keeping generally fit. You know, you could just go and swim, and you might through the winter, you might say, right, I'm really going to work on my swimming, and I'm really going to work on this. And then just be running and biking by feel to and from work. Then as you get close to your race, you definitely want to be having a long run in there and a long ride and a long swim. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks very much.
This is my third question of the week. It's from Kevin Powell. So thank you, Kevin, for asking this question. It's a great one. Kevin says, what is the best way to approach a recovery week? I see a lot of people on Strava doing a recovery week, but still maintaining quite high intensity. They do cut the volume, but isn't this just tapering? So that's a great question. Strava and social media have a lot to answer for in terms of athletes training too hard, because those individuals know that other people are going to be looking at their Strava feeds, what happens on Garmin Connect, what they put onto Instagram or Facebook, and making comments. And unfortunately, if they're affected by this in a negative way, then they may feel the need to train a bit too hard when they shouldn't be. There's nothing to be ashamed of in having a recovery week. I mean, we all need to recover. Perhaps that's where we should start this question, is by asking, why do we need to include blocks of time for recovery? Now, in all of my years of coaching, I have observed athletes that just overtrain. There's a debate now as to whether we should use the phrase overtraining or under recovery. I like under recovery because it suggests that an athlete can maintain a certain level of training, but other things come into their life which then cause them not to recover properly, and so therefore they get fatigued. Now, if you keep on training hard, that fatigue just builds up until some point where you get ill or you get injured or you just lose your mojo. So we want to avoid that at all costs, and that's why we include blocks of time for recovery. You will see with all of the professional athletes and elite athletes in any sport that they include blocks of time for easier training, for recovery. And the reason for this is, as we know, that training just breaks down the body. You don't get fit from training. It's a two-stage process. You break the body down with training. You help it repair and get stronger through recovery. So one cannot happen without the other. How long you need is individual, and you'll only know this with experiment. So what you need to do is keep notes, meticulous notes, because if you don't, you'll forget what worked for you, what didn't work for you, what sessions cause fatigue, what races cause fatigue, how long do you need to rest after certain types of training, after certain types of race. When we do recover, when we do plan our recovery weeks and hope to recover, our goal is to get rid of the fatigue, much as it is with tapering, and to maintain as much fitness as possible. But you will have to accept that your fitness will drop. If you do this right, your fitness will drop a little bit, but by feeling fresh, you'll actually feel stronger in your performances. It's a bit like taking 2 to 3 steps forward and then 1 step back. How long it takes to recover is also very individual. And the factors that are involved mean that the answer from most coaches is, when asked this, the answer is, it depends. First, it depends on how deep you are in the hole. If it was a huge training block, maybe you've been on a training camp or you've done a series of races or something, then you'll be in a bigger hole than if you just had a hard week of training. So the depth of your fatigue is important here. But so is the environment that you exist in. If you have stressful life, it will take you longer to recover. Things like work, family. Females need to consider hormonal balance as well. A poor diet can slow down recovery. A good diet can help speed up recovery. How much sleep you get on a consistent basis, not just one big night of sleep every now and again, but getting regular sleep. That includes going to sleep and getting up at regular times. Also, how old you are, your gender, your training history, and your body type. My observations, and these are just my observations, there may be some scientific basis to this. I know I've not seen too much research, but maybe somebody can point that out. But I have observed that lighter men and females tend to recover faster than more muscular men due to less muscle damage. If you look at some of the elite Ironman athletes, you'll see some females that can do 2 or 3 Ironman races within a month. Now, I'm not sure that's a good thing, but they can, and they seem to do quite well. You don't see as many of the, obviously, the bigger, more muscular males doing that. So maybe there is something in it. I think we also need to accept that there are some humans who are just genetically better at recovering. Can we measure recovery? If you use Training Peaks, they have several measures to determine the training load from a particular session. This is known as training stress score. So that's duration times intensity. If you accumulate lots of TSS scores, in fact, in Training Peaks, they use chronic training load, CTL, and they accumulate training stress scores over a 42-day period. That's balanced out by fatigue. Fatigue is known as acute training load, or ATL, and is measured over a 7-day period. Okay, so we've got TSS. You get TSS points for every single session. Accumulation of TSS points is known as chronic training load, and there's also accumulation of fatigue. Now, when we compare CTL versus ATL, we get TSB. It's actually worked out like this. You subtract yesterday's ATL from yesterday's CTL, and you get form, also known as TSB. Before I talk about TSB, let me just mention TSS. Right at the time I'm recording this, there's a debate on Twitter between some high-level coaches talking about whether TSS has any value or not. It's just a tool. If you use it as a tool and you look at trends rather than exact scores, if you understand that it's not perfect and it doesn't include everything and you need more context sometimes, then TSS can be very helpful. If you're the sort of person, coach or athlete, who just places all of their eggs into that TSS basket and looks at it and thinks higher TSS points are good, lower TSS points are poor, high CTL means you must be fitter and low CTL must mean you're less fit, that's a nonsense. You need context. So I think there's some value to TSS, but you have to understand that individually as a coach. And again, that's a discussion for another podcast. So back to training stress balance. Joe Friel generally reckons that if your TSB is minus 10 to minus 30 and you dip into that regularly, this is a good level of fatigue to have. It's a good overload. And you can get out of this fairly easily with 3 to 5 days of easier training. If your TSB is regularly higher than that, or a bigger minus score, so going below minus 30, minus 40, minus 50, I've seen people who've had minus 150 after a training camp. That's a deeper hole you've dug and it needs longer to get out of. You might also see you get high TSB scores and minus scores immediately after big races. I went to do the Marathon des Sables a few years ago. I was 7 days in super high temperatures, sleeping rough in the desert, and 8 to 10 hours of activity a day. Man, my training stress scores for every day and my TSB were horrendous. I think it was almost minus 200 when I got back. And that did require quite a long period of recovery. So to answer Kevin's question, now that we've defined what recovery is and how long it's going to take, what should we be doing in a recovery week? And how often should we be having them? Again, how often you have them is down to each individual. And hopefully, those of you listening will have learned what you can get away with and what you can't get away with. Some people do recovery on demand, which means they train until they feel tired, and because they're very disciplined, they will take time off and they know when they're feeling fresh, and then they'll go back to training again. Others prefer to have fixed recovery periods. If I'm coaching athletes, I generally put in a recovery period after every 14 days of training, but not for everyone. But planned recovery is good. It stops you pushing too hard. And if you, as I said, if you reflect well with your athlete, or if the coach and the athlete reflect well, or if the athlete reflects well on their own training, you can work out what TSB score you need to be at by the end of those 2 weeks of training in order to start your recovery week, and then you can plan your training accordingly. So the sorts of volume for a recovery week, I've found that if you drop training by 30%, you can do that without losing too much cardiovascular or muscular endurance. So you definitely want to avoid sessions which promote too much fatigue. And anything more than moderate intensity and longer than 2 hours, I would say, is probably unnecessary for the majority of age group athletes. To be more specific, with swimming, I would suggest swimming sessions of 30 to 60 minutes. Swimming is the least stressful on the body. It might be stressful for some people in their mind because they don't feel comfortable. In terms of the damage to the body, it's not as bad because there's less impact. You're horizontal in the water and there's the cooling effect of the water as well. So I think you could probably still do 60-minute sessions without any fatigue, and you could probably still keep your swim volume. I definitely wouldn't do any threshold work. I definitely wouldn't do any high-density VO2 max work, but you could get away with short sprints of up to 30 seconds, as long as it's not a maximal sprint, 80 to 90%, and take long rests, and that'll be good for your feel for the water and your arm cadence. In fact, you might find that swim frequency and having more swimming, so 4 30-minute sessions instead of 2 60s, is better because of the feel for the water. With cycling, I wouldn't ride for any longer than two and a half hours. And for those people doing 2.5 hours, I'd say they've got to have had a lot of training over the years and a lot of volume. But you definitely don't need to do more than 2 hours to sort of fit into your recovery week. And I would keep the effort level below a 75%. So if you work to the math principle of 180 minus age, that'd probably be pretty good intensity to work at. Do some fast cadence work by all means, similar to the high cadence work in swimming, but not with a big load, low loads. I definitely wouldn't do any threshold sessions or VO2 max work. I'd stay away from time trials, and I'd stay away from any big hills which require a prolonged or sustained high power output to get over them. Just for a few days, keep away from them. Ride flat. If you can't ride flat, ride undulating. If you can't achieve either of those, just go on your turbo trainer. You can control the effort and the intensity and the duration much more easily. Running. Running's the one I'm always most concerned about in what people do in a recovery week. It's the most fatiguing because of the impact and the stress on the bones, and it's the one most likely to cause injury. That said, you do need to keep some bone stress there, tendon and ligament loading. I would keep all runs below 60 minutes. Yes, of course, you could probably get away with more, but do you need to? That's the question, is do you need to do that in a recovery week? And I do like that principle of what's the minimum effective dose of training in a recovery week or in any week to do. And if you're doing more than the minimum effective dose, then maybe you're wasting your time. So keep all runs below 60 minutes as a general rule. Keep the intensity below about 75% of max heart rate. So math running here is great. As with swimming and cycling, it's fine to include some short, moderate to fast sprints with long recoveries. So less than 30 seconds, 5K effort over 30 seconds isn't actually that taxing. I definitely wouldn't be doing any longer than that though. And it's more about neuromuscular stimulation than it is developing fitness. Similarly to swimming, you might want to focus on more frequent running. So again, 4 30-minute runs might be better on your body than 2 60-minute runs. Finally, strength training. Now, I know that a lot of you don't do this. That's a mistake, I feel, but that is another podcast as well. But for those of you who do, definitely stay away from any heavy lifting. I would do some moderate level lifting, maybe 60 or 70% load. But don't increase the reps. You can still do 4 to 5 reps with a moderate intensity load. But I would definitely do a lot of technical work and particularly exercises that are going to help you work on stability. So a lot of work for the upper back and the shoulders, a lot of work for the hips and lower back, a lot of work for the knees and ankles. So fine to keep up with body weight stability work. Okay, so that is my outline for recovery and a definition of why I feel we need to include recovery in our training and to have it planned in. That is my way of doing things. It's evolved over 25 years. I realise that if this coach is listening, they may have other ways of doing it. That doesn't necessarily mean that any of us is right, because it's all about reflection. If you have an athlete that you've worked with that makes continued progress over a number of years, minimises injuries and illnesses, then the chances are that you've hit on the right formula for a recovery week for them. But if athletes are regularly getting injured, if they're regularly getting ill, and their training is stop-start, then I would suggest that you could begin your investigations by looking at what they do to recover and how they live their lives. So that's it for this question. Thank you again, Kevin, for asking. In terms of this podcast, thank you to Stuart Melling. Thank you to Gitton Morgan also, not just for posing those questions to me in the first place, but for coming onto the show and chatting with me and allowing me to provide them with some suggestions to help them with their particular issues. I hope you've all found it interesting. If you have questions you'd like to ask me that you would like to have included in a future podcast, please feel free to send them through. And while you're doing that, please let me know whether you're willing to become a guest and for us to record a show, because it really does improve the listener experience to have two people conversing rather than me just narrating the answers. Okay, so that's it for this week. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Enjoy the rest of your time and your training in this summer sun, and I'll be back next week with another great guest.
Right then, that's a wrap for this week. Thanks again for listening. As always, I appreciate that you have plenty of choice out there in podcast land, so it does mean an awful lot to me when you come back regularly. If you enjoyed the podcast, please could you hop onto iTunes or Podbean and leave a rating and a comment if you can. Apparently, it's really good for the ratings, although to be absolutely honest with you, I have no idea how they work these things out. If you like the way I roll and you find some synergy with my approach to life and sport, maybe be interested in joining my SWAT Inner Circle training group. If you are, please just email beth@thetriathloncoach.com for more details. You can also use that email address to ask for my special free gift, which I have for you, which are my top 25 tips on how to be a high performance human. Okay, that's all for this week. I'll be back next week with another great guest. So for now, enjoy the rest of your week.